Today is March 10th, 2010, and we're located at the historic KRE Studios in Berkeley, California. We're talking to Carter B. Smith today. My name is David Jackson. I'm working with Bill Ray and Dave Bellisi under the auspices of the California Historical Radio Society and Steve Cushman. Carter, let's get started and ask you, where were you born and raised?
San Francisco, California. I'm a fourth generation San Franciscan, so we've been around here a long time.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Lowell High School, and I got out in 1955 and went to work in my first job in radio up in Red Bluff. The guy where I lived in San Francisco, over on Union Street, was working at KSAN, which in those days was an AM station. It was up on up by 9th and Market. And he said, there's a job, guy. We just got a guy working for us that just left a job up in Red Bluff. So for once, I didn't spend any time waiting. I got right on the plane and went up to Red Bluff that day. And the guy said, will you work for, I think it was $90 a week? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, okay, fine. So that's how I got started.
But you had an interest in radio before getting the job. Was there something that inspired you
well,
to go
I'd
into
been
radio?
I'd had some background with radio in the hams for a couple of years before that, so I'd had a couple of years of that. And I did do a little work at KSAN, just carrying stuff around. I never talked on the radio, but I was there in 54, so that's really when I got started.
How old were you when you got your first ham license?
14. So I've had that for almost 60 years since I started with that.
What's your call?
K6CWM. And I've had a lot of fun with it, but I haven't done it for some years. I should probably get back with it, but I haven't. So anyway, I started up in Red Bluff. That was my first job and was there for about a year. And then I realized that there had to be something more to life. So I went to City College and then went to State. But just when I started State, there was a job over here at KRE. And I came over and applied to it, and I got the job. So I was here for 5 years. I was the second to last guy on the air at KRE, and I was the first guy for PAT, KPAT, which was what this became after it left KRE.
Can you talk a little bit about what it was like here? What was the programming like? What kind of shows
did
you do
at
the time you were working here?
It was a wonderful radio station, KRE. We had, I did serious music in the afternoon, and we had serious music at night, and the rest of the time was either religion or foreign language. And I did the engineering for both Italian and Portuguese every day. And it was a lot of fun. I liked working with the guys. They'd been in radio since the 20s, so they had really been around. They were lots of fun to be with. I enjoyed it.
Who were some of the people you worked here, work with here?
Probably the best known was Bert Solitor, and he was really the first man to do the kind of programming that we have now today. He, every afternoon, would get the phones open and would get the kids to say what they wanted to hear on the air. And this was back, you're talking about the early 50s. So this was really before the 40, you know, the present stuff. Mm-hmm. And he was very, very good, a nice man, a very good man. I enjoyed working with him.
Let's go back for just a moment. Talk about KSAN when you worked over there in the old, that was in the old merchandise mart building over in the city.
That's where the antenna was right up on the top.
Now, did you only work behind the scenes when you were working there?
Yes, that's right. I was just a kid then.
What about the famous incident with they had a television station there.
Yes, but I didn't know anything about that, but I told about it. There was, 32 or 36?
Channel 32, right.
32 was out of there. And one night, the guys that were doing it went across the street and had a few drinks, and they brought a young lady back to the station, and they took her clothes off, and they put her on a bench, naked, and they left the rig on for about a half hour. And those old tubes, if you turned them off when they were like that, when you turned it back on, that was what you saw. And the next day when they turned it on, there was this gal looking.
There we go. We're good.
KSAN had George. George, he used to call himself George, I forget, over there. But he, when he left there and came over here to KDFC, I mean, what's the other FM? I mean, AM that was over here.
KIPE?
No. That did race radio for years. And there was
KDIA.
KDIA, yeah.
Oh, Jumpin' George Oxford.
Yes.
Yeah.
George, yeah, but he couldn't say when he came over here, he couldn't say, all I could give was his name. And he was a good man. He used to listen to me doing classical music and would call me occasionally and visit. Nice guy. Really
well,
nice
guy.
That's
an amazing thing. I did not know that.
Yeah. So he was over there at KSAN in those days, at the beginning.
Yeah. With KSAN, when you were working there, was Norwood Patterson the owner?
Yes, he was. He was a religious guy and owned the station. Yeah. Very much so.
The Pattersons are still involved in radio. They still own, the family still owns religious radio stations down in Southern California.
Is that so?
It's amazing. Yeah. They've been involved forever.
I never met any of those guys. I stayed out of that.
Now, Bill Doubleday, did you work with him?
No.
You didn't know him at that time?
No.
Either. I know he was involved with the Patterson family, too. Let's go back. You, when you started in radio, did you have plans to do radio your entire life, or did you have some other career path you were interested
in
taking?
No, I liked doing it, and I did it for 53 years, and the last day I had as much fun as the first in many ways. It really is something to do. I really enjoy it. I didn't like some of the people I worked for, but so what? Once I got in my studio, I couldn't care less what the boss was saying, you know. I just did my bit.
Now, there's a famous recording of you here at KRE. I believe your cat had died recently.
Huh, really?
I don't know if you've ever heard that recording out of your own. That was your... It was. I don't know if that was a KSFO audition tape, but there was... You know, you were playing classical music here.
Yeah,
and
right. I did that in the afternoon.
Did you have your eye on, at that time, on some other place to work while you were here,
well,
and moving up the radio food chain?
What happened was is that the old people that owned it, the chapel of the Chimes,
uh-huh.
They sold it to a guy back in New York who owned WPAT, which was a wonderful radio station. They really started what KABL brought into this market. So they bought this station and changed to KPAT. And I was their first morning man. And when they came in here, I said, you know, you have a great background, and I'm looking forward to learning something. And the manager said, there's nothing to learn. You just do what you're told 100% of the time, and that'll be it, because there's nothing for you to learn. So I said to myself that day, that's it, I'm out, I'm going. So I started to set up getting to KSFO, that's where I wanted to go. It was the number one station in the market. And I had two people in the station who were helping me, Mike Powell of the news department, and also one of the guys on the air, Jack Carney,
uh-huh.
And they were helping me to get me in there, and eventually it took about 6 months to do it, but I managed to make it. So I went from almost the smallest station to the biggest.
Now, KSFO, your first job wasn't on the air as a disc jockey, your first job was in news?
News and studio, and I also did the Sunday morning show.
Was that Sunday Sounds at that time?
Yes, yeah. And it was the highest... Of all, it even had higher than Sherwood.
Hmm.
It was incredible. 24 shares. Wow. 24 out of 100 people were on that watching that station. And I always used to tell Sherwood, you know, well, that means that about 76% don't think much about you, do they? And he always would go crazy hearing that kind of stuff.
And then somewhere along the line, you fell in as being his sidekick. First, as I remember, one of the first recordings of you at KSFO is subbing.
Well, what happened was, is when I started to work in the morning, I was doing the early morning, 5 o'clock I got there, and one of the guys said, "Now you're going to meet Sherwood today for the first time, and let me tell you about this guy. If he really gets angry at you, you'll be fired. So you better be very careful how you deal with this man. He is very, very difficult to deal with. He's very difficult to deal with." So I said, okay. So I left him alone. I was doing the news, and I just did that. And then after about a week, there was something that I saw that I knew he would like. So I went on just, you know, to talk back and said something. Then he enjoyed that, and that was that. And then a couple of days later, I saw something else that I thought he would like, and I did that. And eventually he said, "Why don't you come in here and tell us that?" And that was how it started. And then it wasn't too much longer that every hour, the first half hour, I was with him, and then the second half, I was in the news department, which they hated because one of their men only worked half time. And eventually, it meant that I had to become a disc jockey and stop doing the news at all, which was fine. That's what I wanted anyway. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed doing the news there when I did it. And then, as you say, after a while, if Sherwood didn't make it to work, I would do his show for him. And as it turned out, I checked it later, 20% of his shows were mine. And 20% of his money was my money. Seemed to work out pretty good. And so that's how it was. He would miss about one day a week. He wouldn't go to work.
But you also fell in as the sidekick on things like Super for All.
Oh, yes. We did a whole bunch of things together for many years. And we became very good friends, as good as you could be with him. He was a very unusual man. But we spent about an hour a day in the evenings talking on the phone about what we were going to do and about what life was like and all these other things. And we did that for many months until he quit. I think it was Hawaii one time.
Okay.
Yeah, he went over to Hawaii to beat that great disc jockey that was over there.
Akuhin.
Yes, Pupure. Right, which he didn't do.
Uh-huh.
It was really a problem for him because he was never the same after he lost doing Hawaii like he wanted to do it because he couldn't.
You were there at KSFO from 63 to 69, 70?
No, I was there to about 72. It was 72? Almost 10 years I was at KSFO.
And during that time, the lineup of the radio station from top to bottom, it seemed like it was a continuing
moved around
All-Star
a little
team.
Bit. Yeah. We had Al Collins, we had whatchamacallit, who did a lot of band stuff. Come on, Smith. I can't think of his name. It's ridiculous.
Del Courtney?
Yes, Del Courtney.
He was an
amazing man uh-huh. because after he got off work, he always went up to every day, 5 days a week, up to the lake, where he had a band. So he would work up there until 1 o'clock in the morning, and then come back to San Francisco, try to sleep a little bit, and then go back on the radio. And he did that 5 days a week for some years, all the way up to the lake.
And then, of course, the atmosphere around the station. You mentioned, you know, 24 share on a station like that.
Yeah.
Just, you know, being the hub of activity at the Fairmont Hotel and the social world and the Giants baseball and everything else and the 49ers at that time. And
yeah, we had
else.
Both. We had both so, teams. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful, you know.
I don't know if there was ever in the history of radio station that had from top to bottom
there was
the
few,
amount of talent.
There was a few stations, KDFC, I mean, in Pittsburgh.
KDKA.
Yeah, a few like that, maybe 10 in the country, I'd say, that had up to all across the whole time heavy-duty guys. Like, for example, we did our own music. We didn't have anybody doing that. We had our music director who would tell us what the new stuff was and And she'd say, I think this is good, or this is... But we put our own music together every day.
When you say she, you're talking about Elma Greer.
Elma Greer, yeah. She's a wonderful lady, and she did a wonderful job for many years. But for a lot of years, we did it ourselves. And, of course, that doesn't go anywhere anymore. I mean, that doesn't exist.
Sure.
So, as I say, I was there about 10 years, and then that was the end of that. KSFO was beginning to lose its ability because radio was changing. Mm-hmm. The kids were not on AM now. They were starting to go on FM, and so were other people. And so the ability to have those kind of numbers, it just wouldn't work.
What do you think? But there was an enduring appeal to KSFO at that time. It seemed like, not just because they were carrying, you know, the baseball team and the football team, but it seemed like it cut across all age groups, even though it was playing grown-up music.
For a while it did, yeah. But then all of a sudden the kids said, we don't want that. We want, you know, the new stuff.
Was it that a KFRC came along with a Dr. Don Rose? Was it just that radio was becoming more fragmented at that time?
Well, both. They're both reasons. KFRC with Don was doing really well, and he was very, very good. And he had the younger people, you know. I mean, he was really good at that. In fact, I took over for him at KFRC.
We'll get to that. That's one more jump down the down line.
More than one.
Something of a more trivial nature. You had the world's. Yeah, you may still have the world's largest T-shirt collection. In fact, I'm surprised you're out of uniform today.
Well, I thought I'd be a little bit more serious. Formal? I had about 6,000 T-shirts.
How did that start?
That started at KNBR,
okay.
And people began to send me shirts, and I wore them once, and that was it. And all of a sudden, I had big, you know, like this in my car, all lined up, and so I did that for 27 years.
Wow.
Never wore the same shirt more than once.
And where are they today?
A lot of them are gone away, and I still have a lot that someday will go back to the Smithsonian. Uh-huh. I don't know. They're going to have to come and get them. I'm not going to pay for it. They'll have to come and get them.
And the transition from KSFO to KNBR, was that a direct move from KSFO to KNBR? Was there a
essentially it was. I had a little time off, but then they said, would you like to do weekends? So I said, sure. So I started there. And a great story about KNBR is the first day I was on the air there, the program director, Ron Fell, came me on the phone. He gave me a call and said, you're sounding really good. Just keep it up. Thank you very much. And I said, I thought you were with the Raiders, because he was even doing the Raiders then. He's the producer. And he said, yeah, I am. I said, but... they're in Denver. He said, that's where I am. That's where I'm listening to you. And that's an amazing radio station. It's the only 50,000-watt station in the Bay Area with one antenna. And so it has a complete, you know, KCBS and KGO have signals that go in
directional.
But not KNBR. So I had a great time there, about 10 years, working there too.
And so you went from weekends to working afternoons?
Yes, exactly. And I stayed there the whole time. I did the afternoons for the whole time.
And again, it seemed like there was a very clubby, collegial feeling
very
at the
much.
Radio station
sure.
with Frank and Mike Frank, and yeah. everybody else who was there at that time.
Exactly. And the original, it was Frank and then Mike and then me. And then eventually they took Mike and put him in with Frank. So they had another place.
On top of that, it was also one of the last of the great owned and operated NBC stations.
Very much so.
You had that behind you as
Very
well
much
at
so.
That time.
Yes. We had the same checks as the network guys.
Wow.
But the amounts were different. But yes, and, they were good to work for, too. I have never had any trouble with the guys there. And I did some wonderful things. I went all around the world on a weekend for Pan American and for NBC, And then I did another flight all the way out into the Pacific on all the islands, and great stuff that I enjoyed.
When you came back in, was it the Coral Sea or was it the...
Was it
Coral Sea or the Hornet? Coming into Alameda, was the Coral Sea?
Yeah. Flew out onto the aircraft and did
back
some stuff.
Golden Gate.
Yeah. And I guess that particular aircraft carrier is no more, I don't think. But we used to have, in fact, we used to take people, a couple of times our listeners would go up on that, and they got hundreds of thousands of people up to see the aircraft carrier, and they always thanked us for doing it. But obviously, it was them. We didn't have any aircraft carrier, it was them.
You've always had an interest in airplanes and aviation and things like that.
Boats
as well.
Yeah.
But was it the China Clipper all the way around the...
It was the 747, but we went from all of the islands in the Pacific to all the way out to where it stopped, and we had a week there in that area, and it was a great time. And of course, Pan American did all these wonderful deals, and they went bankrupt partly because of it, having deals like sending people to Madrid, but we sure had fun. It was a great show. We really enjoyed it. And it wasn't with the KNBR, it was with the KFRC that I went through the Panama Canal.
Oh, okay.
and did a radio show, which was really fun. But that's another
point. So you started at KNBR in 72?
Around there.
And that lasted
about 10 years.
Okay.
Usually my interest in a place or their interest in me... About makes 10 years, and that was about it. So, yeah, they changed around and began to change. They were beginning to think about sports then, and it wasn't too many years later that's all they did. That's what they do now, obviously.
So then there was there an interval between? Did I miss a station between KNBR and KFRC between?
Well,
Magic
I was
61?
On an FM station, a wonderful FM station, KSFR.
Okay.
Which was the very first. Serious music in the Bay Area, and the guy that owned that really liked my work.
That was Al Levitt?
Yes, Al Levitt.
Oh, darn.
Yeah,
okay.
I worked for him. And
were you part of the Wolf Gang, or were you? Was that
no,
they
no.
were that was this was
that was
pre Tom Donahue, pre progressive rock and Stephen Ponick and those guys.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
But he was a nice man, and I worked with him for a few months.
I'll be darned.
And in fact, part of the time I worked for KSFR, I was also with the KRE. They let me do that on the weekends over there. And it was a lot of fun. He had a beautiful station from a technical sense, you know.
Because he was an audiophile. And,
you bet.
And from that standpoint.
For example, when you turned the mic on, all the air went down.
Wow.
There was no air when you had your microphone on. Because he didn't want to hear that sound. And he would call and say, you know, I think I hear some kind of a problem at about 18,000, And I'd say, nobody can hear that but you and bats and dogs. Humans don't know 18,000 Ks, you know. Very, very few. But he would always call and say, there's something wrong, you know. Because that was his life. It was the technical part of it.
We'll move back to Magic 61. Dr. Don, of course, had been at when it was the Big 610 and the Amazing
A.
And
he did a wonderful, wonderful job.
But then he seemed to, you know, lose interest in the or just wasn't didn't feel like it was
well when
something
when,
he was in tune with.
When KFRC left his music and went into the kind of stuff that I used to do, he didn't like that too much. But he stayed there, mm-hmm. and they finally said, "That's it, you know." John, you know, time's
mm-hmm.
out.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in there and did the morning, and I was the last morning man for the whole group. The KFRC was the last of the RCO.
The RKO stations,
yeah. I was the last one, and they sold that. So I was the last guy to do that. And there was they were wonderful, too. They were wonderful people to work with. And then we got this guy over here in the... Lafayette, guy who was really into buildings, but he bought a radio station because he thought it was a great idea.
Was this Unkifer?
No. No. He did the KSFO.
Oh,
this was begins with B. I can't remember his name. But he was...
I'll blurt it out in a few moments.
We met once, and he said, "You probably want to know a lot about me." And I said, "No, not really."
This is the 92.1 FM?
No, this was KFRC he bought.
610.
Yeah.
Oh, on KFRC.
Yeah, right.
Zedone, he bought 99.7.
Yeah.
And
I'm
drawing an absolute
blank. Anyway, he was in there for a couple of years and got out because he never made any money. Because radio was changing while he started, and it never got any better. Changed around to him. You guys, there coffee out there?
There is coffee. What would you like in it?
Just black would be great, Steve.
Can we leave this thing running?
We're okay on tape.
We're not running out of electronic recording device.
We got another half hour. You might mention, tell us about your television career.
Okay, I can just take it very briefly. I have been on every station in the Bay Area and never did very well. Excuse me. Never did very well in any of the things I did. Because just as I began to really understand what TV was, the show would end, you know. So I was on 4, 5, 7, 2, and for years I was on Channel 9. I did a lot of their pitching, I did that for years. One of the very first. I went back all the way to the beginning of Channel 9.
Howard, was it?
Yeah, somewhere down there.
Did you do 44 for a while?
Yes, I did that. I did two shows there.
Tell us about the evening news with Don Sherwood.
Well, we did a show on Channel 44 every night, and it was taped. It wasn't live, which it had two problems with it. The first was that when we would finish the half-hour TV show, then we would stand like little animals, hoping that it was recorded. And about once every 2 weeks, the guy would say in the booth, "Sorry, didn't get it. Have to do it again." Well, Sherwood put that up about twice. And after the third time, he said, "If it doesn't work, I'm gone. And then Carter will do the whole half hour by himself." You know, so which I did. Well, that went under blam like that. So then I did a absolutely bizarre deal where I had people try to win some prizes in a movie. And that was just absolutely unbelievable because the opening to this show was written by the attorneys for whatchamacallit, the big company that owned it.
Kaiser.
Those are the guys that had the opening. They did it to make sure that everything was correct. Absolutely bizarre. And then the second factor was there was somebody in the people that worked on the thing that hated the company, and he would try to get something broken on the set every night. There'd be something wrong with the set. One time the M in movie fell down. Another time we had these balls that would be going into this gizmo, and you'd pick one out, and that would have the number on it, you know, that kind of deal. Well, he fixed it so that the things came out at once. Hundreds of these balls all came around at one time. Then another time, and this was the worst, he came up with a way so that the phone I was using, the minute you gave my number, it would shut off because you didn't want that on obviously on TV. That was my inside number. He figured out how to do it so that everybody did see what the number was, and the phone began to ring and ring and ring. And here I'm on TV, you know, just unbelievable. So that was another show that went bombs.
Tell us about the commonality with the KBHK studios and what it was like working at KNBR, because they were the same.
At one time, KNBR, not when I was there, but at no. one time, where was it? At Taylor
and O'Farrell?
Right. That's where 44 was, and they had some pretty good stuff. It wasn't too bad.
The original NBC.
Yes, exactly.
KNBC.
And I remember going down and visiting some friends when KNBR was there, and it was really incredible to see it, because some of the stuff went all the way back to World War II. That you could see they had. How many, they don't make them anymore, where the stuff came
teletype.
Yeah. They'd have 10 of those, all in with a big, you could look in and see them. And they went back to World War II.
Well, the difference between that and that era was they had production studios with audience spaces in there. Then when you got to like Fox Plaza, where it was built for modern radio.
Yeah, there, for example, up there, they had the, what was the name of the show that the Standard
Oil Hour?
Yeah, right. And they had a big audience there for that. And I remember seeing that. And the first time I ever was on the radio was in that building for what was later KGO's. And they had some shows on the Pacific Coast, and I was on one of those, and that was in the late 40s. So that's my first example when I was a baby. So then, let's see, we're at, we've pretty well carried with the KNBR, and it was about 10 years. And then I went back to KSFO again, and this time it was owned by the people up in Seattle, King. And they were terrible. Absolutely terrible. Really what they wanted was to make sure that the studios were clean. That was their main approach. If we can keep the place clean, we'll have good numbers. So I stayed there for just a very, little while, and I knew this was not going to make it. So then I went over to KFRC and was there for about 8 years, I think. And that was wonderful, Magic 61. We had a lot of fun with that. A lot of fun. I went all over the world with them, too.
It was the original 415 Bush Street studios over there that had been... you moved out of there?
No,
were you 500 Washington at that time?
Right,
you guys moved out of there by that time?
They'd left the other place.
The old original digs over there.
So you went all over the world for that station? Reporting news, or...?
Just as doing it on... during those years, I went on a lot of cruises. And I would take listeners, and that's basically what I did.
The Mike Cleary connection with a lot of those cruises too, right?
Not with me. No, he did his, and I did mine. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but we went all over the place.
Magic 61 had the Silver Platter Club, I think it was called, or something like that, and that was one of those first trying to build a social network among your listeners kind of things.
The company would love to have the signal, people that we had, because now that 960 is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just nothing. Both of them, the 610, 960, and those are the two that the company still has. Why they keep them, I don't know, but they do. So I had a lot of fun with them there. They had the beautiful radio out in the car in the big. What company owned that big? That made that their mobile station was a beautiful machine.
Oh, the mobile studios, the one they called the Virgin Sturgeon at KFRC. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we did that, and I'd go out once a week in the morning somewhere and broadcast from it. It was a lot of fun.
I think we've got pictures of you and Dan Sorkin all the different people who worked on Buddy Hatton worked there at...
That machine, you could do the whole thing from it. Music, everything, which is very... And now it's never done. Nobody would ever think about doing that, but we used to do that. And if we went and had to move around, we would take it up to an airplane and then take it down.
Right.
which actually have turntables also?
Oh, the whole thing,
the whole thing, everything.
But mostly it was the carts.
The cartridges.
Yeah. Okay. But we did that. In fact, we had a guy who lived over in the East Bay. In his first day as the PD, he was getting ready to go to work. And when he opened the door, there I was. And I'd been running from there, but he didn't know it because I didn't make any, you know, indication that I was there, obviously, because I wanted to get him. So he came in to work in his own station, which was a lot of fun.
Did the term "prince trapped in the body of a disc jockey" come from your fertile mind, or
I think so? But I think so, but when I can't remember. It was a long,
just
long
somewhere
time
along
ago.
The way, it became the catchphrase.
So we let's see, where are we? We were at your KFRC. Then I went back to KSFO for the third time with Unkenfer.
Yeah,
and he was even less than king, if that's possible. So I didn't stay there again very long, and then got with the last station that I worked at, essentially, and was there for about 8 years, too. So that
pretty
was
dynamic lineup at that radio. Station? KABO.
KABO. And they did the same kind of music that 610 had done.
Was that was post McClendon, or was it during?
Oh, no.
That was way past him, it. Yeah. You betcha. Mm-hmm. It was owned by, not Disney, but...
Shamrock had it for a while, right. Which was Roy Disney's company.
Yeah, yeah.
So. But they'd owned it after McClendon had...
And then then it went over eventually to the big outfit.
Who's the beast whose name shall not be spoken here today.
Yeah.
Begins with two C's.
It does. And then two C's and a U.
See you in Tijuana.
And... I had actually fun working for them. They were fine, but then they took us off of 610 and put us on a little, FM over in the East Bay, and
that was the 92.1 over in Walnut Creek, where they were just keeping it alive with a pulse.
Yeah,
despite the fact that they had Jim Lang and had you and had Mike Cleary on there as well. So
that was just a brief period, right?
Some months, and then they took it off, and that was the end of that. And so, fine. I think they still have the call.
They buried it down in down in Salinas, where it means so very much to the people of the...
Is it still up down there?
Yeah.
It is, huh?
Yeah. For what it's worth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a time for everything. You know, and then there's a time when you don't anymore.
Well, paying homage to the great cable car tradition of Salinas, I think, is...
right there. You know, worthy. They're very happy with it down there. But that was another place that I enjoyed very much. I enjoyed working there.
Now, what is your... this is just for my own, because it's a stupid question I love to ask these. You've played classical music on the air, and you played jazz, and you played big bands, and, you know,
country.
And country as well.
Yeah.
And what, when it comes to your personal taste as far as music, you have a pretty wide...
I'm pretty well stick to serious music, what I listen to, and it's not that much. I listen to the news on the radio, and that's about it, you know. Mm-hmm. Nothing else really gets me too excited. So.
How long have you lived in that beautiful, magnificent house up in Tiburon?
Oh, thank you.
On the border of Tiburon and Bill.
35 years. I've been there, about 35 years. Because I couldn't get the front door today with the way prices are. 35 years ago, you could buy a nice house in Marin County for not a lot of money.
That beautiful, the beautiful view off of your veranda. I remember you told me a story before about Hap Harper. Did Hap buzz you one?
all the time. Happer was our guy in the sky, and he would come by once every couple of weeks until finally the people around the neighborhood said, you know, we're really sick of this. You know, that guy coming way down and making all that noise. So we stopped it. But I had more fun at KSFO when I was with the copter, which would come over and land in my right near my house, And I'd get in there and I'd do the talking for the guy who was running it for doing traffic. And I did that for...
Was it Warren Bacchus or who was it?
No, it was two guys, but they were never together in the machine, one or the other. What's his name? And the other guy was essentially did all the technicals on it, but he could fly the thing too.
Where did they land?
Just
on Paul Frees's house, or
no? No, because I didn't live. This was so many years ago. I was lived up in the hills of Tiburon.
Oh, okay.
And they would just stop in front of the house. In those days, you could do that. Now you can't. Nobody will let you do that.
But no helicopters in my backyard. Huh?
In those days, any place that the guy who was flying it thought was legal was legal. In fact, when Dan Sorkin was injured very badly and was in the hospital, the first time I went over was with the helicopter and landed right in the front of the hospital and went and visited with him. So, and that was when I was in KSFO. In fact, that's how I wound up doing afternoons at KSFO, because he was out for a long time.
Huh.
So that's when I did that.
Carter, talk about your feelings on the current state of radio and where you think it's going.
That's a very good question. I don't know what it's going to do, but at the moment, I don't think it's going to get any better. I think someday it may go back to what we used to do, where there were people on the radio. There aren't any people now. They're not allowed to be, even if they could. There's a few around.
Personality.
Yes, personality, yeah. Uh-huh. Right. In other words, talking about whatever the guy wants to talk about. Nowadays, they have little, you know, then you write, you say that, and then go on to the next thing. And that's about it. And the reason for that is that a lot of the people that own broadcast places are not broadcasters. Yeah. They're doing something else. And when they make enough money, they get out of it. And they're smart to do that because it's apparently getting weaker and weaker and weaker. Like AM radio is, just about gone. And FM is not that far away. And there are so many other places where people can get this material now. Just getting on the air is not much anymore. The kids don't care about it, you know, and they're becoming older and older, and they're still not interested in it. So where it's going to go, I don't know.
The technology is a big factor.
You
what's
bet.
Happening with radio.
You bet. Yeah. Sure.
The internet. And
you
podcasts
bet.
And
exactly. Like there's so many different places that people can get this material now without having a radio, you know.
But, you know, the industry also pretty much obsoleted itself because by consolidation, you came up through essentially the radio farm system where you started, you know, at a small station and then worked through and continued to move up. And radio doesn't do that anymore, and so they don't develop new talent.
Well, exactly. There's nowhere, David, where people can learn to do what I did. Because there's not enough opportunity to do it, so nobody's going to learn it. You know, when I was a kid, to work on the radio was a really, really an important thing, and now it isn't. It's that simple, you know, which is too bad, but that's the way it goes.
At one time on the radio landscape, you could go to a Redding or a Red Bluff or a Merced or a Modesto and work and learn the craft there, and move up, and now the radio station in Redding and Red Bluff, Modesto and Merced, they all be playing the exact same.
Yeah, and they're taking it
off the same satellite.
Yeah, same satellite. They're not even. There's no like stuff there anymore. You know, like when I went to Red Bluff, one of the things we did was to do some of our stuff from the fair every year. Mm-hmm. In fact, the first interview I ever did on the radio was with a woman who had walked 5 miles to the fair. What nobody knew, including me, and this was my first interview, was she was totally deaf. So she would try to figure out what I was saying and would try to give me an answer by just making it up because she couldn't hear me. So that was my first example of doing a radio interview, and that was up in Red Bluff.
Carter, do you have any recordings of your material through the years?
I got tons of it, and I never look at it or hear it, which is too bad. But I, for some reason, when I've done it, I've done it. In fact, I got 10 discs the other day from stuff that I did at KFRC. But for some reason, I'm never...
Not it's history.
yeah, it's gone.
But you know, it's also, I mean, you've loaned me over the past couple of years. Well, stuff, things dating back to the KRE, and a lot of KSFO, and we had the, you know, the, just a full collection, you know, reels of tape of Super Frog.
Yeah.
And things that weren't directly related to you. A lot of KNBR and a lot of Magic 61 things in there also. So
I've still got a stuff, a lot of stuff at home. But it's up in the attic, and that's where it stays. I don't know. For some reason, it's just I just can't get too excited about something that I did 20 years ago.
I'm sure there are a lot of other people, though, that would enjoy eventually hearing that.
Well, there are, particularly people our age, because if you get you know, starting down, getting too far, they don't know. They don't know what even what that kind of radio was like. They have no idea. So to want to hear it is not they're too excited about. But through the years, yeah, particularly some of the like the Super Frog stuff, we could have sold those and probably done okay with it.
But you remember they did KSFO did put out a record.
Yes, they did
around the same time. I think just before you got there, they put out all of the Sound of the City.
Yeah,
and some, you know, Carney and Sherwood bloopers and things like that, and they did things like that. There were obviously a lot of them in circulation because a lot of them are still out there.
But remember, all that stuff was 40 years old.
But again, I'll just, you know, off topic completely, but on the Radio Museum website, the KNBR page, the KSFO page, and your personal page, your Hall of Fame page on there, get traffic like crazy, and people will still sit on there for hours and listen
to those recordings.
So,
that's good to know.
You know, there are people who are of a certain age who are still interested in those things.
Carter, do you get mail from old fans?
Occasionally. I'll tell you where I get them is on the computer. They will know somebody that knows me and has my, and all of a sudden somebody will show up on there and say, you don't know who I am, blah, 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 but blah, blah, blah. And I always answer them right away, say thank you, appreciate that, but I don't go into a great, you know.
Did you ever get a, hi, you interviewed me, do you remember me?
No, I don't think I can remember that happening too many times. Maybe a few.
Aside from the lady in Red Bluff, who's the most famous person you, or the most memorable person, perhaps made a great impression on you that you interviewed or met during your long and
well, right in this room, I had Louis Armstrong in here because one of the shows that I did was the oldest show in that particular area in the United States. It went back to the 20s, and it was called the Sunday Night Show, and it was mostly jazz, and he came here. I was going to have a guy who I really wanted to see, and he shined me off, and that was his name began with B. He played the saxophone. Most of his life he lived in Europe. Bichet.
Okay.
Probably you don't even recognize that name, but he could play the faxes, you know, like anybody. He was really great. And he was supposed to come one day, and he didn't. But I've talked to and have been with presidents and all kinds of people through the years. Did a lot of that. I had Reagan on the air a couple times. One of the great stories of Sherwood was when they were going to get to protect the bay. Mm-hmm. They got that bid through, and I had a call by KSFO by the guy who was up in Sacramento, our senator, said you're going to have to call today to the governor, because unless we get his help, we're not going to get this through. And he said, I'm going to give you a phone number. This is right at his bedside. He's reading his paper now. It's 7 o'clock in the morning. Call him and get him on with Sherwood. So I called, and it was Pat Brown, the old governor. And the first thing he said was, "Where did you get this number?" And I said, "We have it up on the in the men's room. There's four or five numbers like that." "Well, what do you want?" And I said, "We want to get you to help us with this bill." And he said, "I don't like that bill." And I said, "Why not, Governor?" He said, "Because it takes power away from me." And he said, "I'm not in the business of having all this stuff go out. I want to protect what I have." And I said, "Well, I can understand that." But I said, "You lived and grew up in San Francisco looking over that bay, and now it's starting to go away. And that's what we want to stop." "Oh," he said, "give me on with Sherwood. I'll get on there with him." So he right there changed his mind, right there. And he said, "Yeah, I'll go along with it." So that's how that deal got. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been. That was a nice time that morning. We felt really good about it.
What haven't we covered? Okay. What anything we've missed that you?
Well, I've enjoyed this very much, and I hope I'll be around just to look at it.
What do you think about what's going on in this building now?
I'm very excited about this. It's a slow process, obviously, to put all this place back. But every time I come here, and I don't come here that much, but when I do come, I see differences, and they're all excellent, you know. It probably will never come back to where it was. You just wouldn't be able to. For example, in there you've got a transmitter now. No more in there, huh?
No, the transmitter is back here now.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. That's where it was originally.
Yes. Yeah, there's a couple of backup transmitters in this room, but they're not even hooked up anymore. Yeah,
now, so, of course, there are two AM transmitters. When you worked at KRE, there was only one.
That's correct, yeah. Right. The other one, of course, is in the new area.
But that was the Magic 61 transmitter. So you actually were on both of these because the 610 came off of the off the same.
Yeah, line. Right. Yeah, it's a beautiful signal.
Do we have space on this to have Carter tell the story of the famous sticker on the air conditioning?
I'd like to have him do that.
And then do the can we shut off for just a moment and run in there real quick and do that?
You want to go in the other room
shut
there?
Shut that off for a moment.
Yeah, we want to go in the other room and we want to do your famous sticker on the pipe.
Okay. The sticker on the pipe moment.
Now, let's
sure
see.
You're sick of it, but
oh no, that's okay.
Can we walk you around?
Oh, we were talking. Up on the ceiling here, you see something that I used to have on my coat up in downtown Berkeley, where I was doing something. I forget what it was, but I was also drinking, because in those days I drank. And I came down here, and I put this sticker up there, and it's been up there over 40 years, and it's never been taken down.
Is it true you came to sleep it off in the general manager's office?
That's exactly
that night?
Right. I went upstairs in the boss's office and went to sleep. I went up there occasionally, sometimes not by myself even. But this is another soul magic thing we won't talk about. But it's still up there all these years later, which I get a kick out of.
Well, Carter, on behalf of all of us who've known and loved and listened to you for so many years, I'm glad we had this opportunity to drag you out here. Thank you so much for sharing so many of your memories with us. Really appreciate it.
I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
I enjoyed it very much.
Cut.
You were out. That's